Welcome to the Steroids Podcast with your host, Dan the Bodybuilder from Thailand. Boom! Boom! Let's get started here. The Steroids Podcast is brought to you by Ultimate Guide to Roids, 109-page ebook by Dan the Bodybuilder from Thailand. Now, for the first time in bodybuilding history, you have someone with no corporate interests and no obligation to please anyone, not walking on eggshells to not offend. Ultimate Guide to Roids gives you the information, the whole truth, not a full truth and a half truth, full truth. Ultimate Guide to Roids gives you the keys to the Lamborghini, gives you the information, and lets you decide what to do with it. It's a crime this information has been suppressed this long. Now let's get on with the podcast. Okay, welcome to the next episode of the Bodybuilding Podcast. Let's get started on some questions. Parkinson asks, can you talk about metformin a bit, and does it have benefit with moderate to high testosterone, 500 to 1,000 milligrams, without using HGH, or is HGH the spark plug that it needs to have transforming body change traits? Excited to see more podcasts. Your biggest medium-sized fan, ha ha ha. The growth hormone, if you use it without, the metformin, if you use it without HGH, what it's going to do is it's going to be a weight loss agent. It's going to make it so that your liver stops producing carbohydrates and glucose out of protein and other nutrients. So it stops or halts gluconeogenesis. And it's going to make it so that you need to produce less amounts of insulin, storage hormone, in response to the amounts of carbohydrates that you're eating. So it's going to help you to lose fat. It's going to help you to lose weight if you use it without HGH. Now, it also decreases the amount of calories that you absorb. And it also makes it so that you don't absorb some other stuff too, like B vitamins. So somebody who's using metformin should take a B vitamin supplement for sure. And that's, you know, with metformin without HGH, that's pretty much the effects of it. Like if you're a hard gainer, you definitely don't want to take that because it's going to make it harder for you to gain. If you are a easy gainer and you have problems with like, you know, gaining too much fat and stuff like that when you bulk, well, metformin can be a big weapon to use right there. Or if you're someone who just like has hard time cutting, it's definitely a powerful cutting agent. Now, when you add HGH to it, that's a spark plug that changes the way that metformin works. So when you add HGH to it, you get more of a, like an effect that is approximating injecting insulin with HGH, because metformin makes your own body's insulin work more potently. It makes your own body's insulin function more like a drug because it increases the sensitivity of all your cells to insulin. So rather than increasing the amount of insulin, like injectable insulin was, you are, with metformin, increasing your sensitivity, so the force production, or the amount of firepower that a smaller amount of insulin is producing, you're potentiating its effects by using metformin. And when you do that combined with HGH, lighting up the insulin pathway and the HGH pathway at the same time, that creates like freaky alien looking thing, you know. It's so metformin, if you're not using injectable insulin with HGH, you can approximate the effect. It's not the same, it's not as extreme, but you can approximate that effect by using metformin instead of insulin with HGH. And so you can get like a freaky effect, like more veins, more muscles really pushing up against the skin. It increases the fat burning potency of growth hormone, to use metformin with it. And in a more 3D effect to the body, more, cause it, you know, the metformin makes the insulin that you have, your natural insulin, function more like a drug. So, you know, when you have the HGH going in there at the same time, you've got the, you're super sensitive to insulin and you've got high HGH levels and you've got insulin on board and HGH on board at the same time, you get this super compensation, this really full thing, this effect that it's like you feel like, well, did I just gain 30% width to my shoulders or something like that? You know, you really feel like you took the serum. As far as creating that inhuman alien look, like that people have, where it's like so 3D and so box shaped, and it looks like they're kind of like blown up, like you almost like connected an air compressor to their muscles or something like that. That's messing with the insulin pathway and messing with the HGH pathway at the same time. That's what produces that cosmetic effect. And as far as like insulin gains, like insulin gains are pretty fucking transient, because like people who are using a lot of insulin, you know, like some people will say like, oh, you should use like a lot of insulin instead of like a lot of steroids, you know? And so that's like one way of doing things. And so, you know, there's like these bodybuilders, you know, that, you know, they're running outrageous doses of insulin that, you know, like rival diabetics and stuff. And, you know, normally those are going to be the guys who aren't needing to use as much steroid because they're using so much insulin. Insulin can be pretty toxic for your body. Can be pretty toxic for your body. So yeah, I'm not a proponent of that way of doing things. And I don't really like the way that bodybuilding looks once insulin started getting really popular. So after the 80s is when insulin started getting really popular in open pro bodybuilding. So I prefer the look of pre-1990s bodybuilding. But 1990s bodybuilding and after is when, you know, everybody started looking more like a refrigerator or some kind of science experiment before, or some kind of science experiment, you know, and that's because, like, we're talking about manipulating the insulin and the HGH pathway produces that alien looking body, whereas focusing mostly on roids and then using some HGH in there too, but not massive amounts, produces that body from the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the one that, you know, a normal person looks at and thinks like, okay, that's like a dream body in another world. But it's not like some kind of like massive refrigerator where they're like, you know, the average person is just like disgusted by it or something like that. So I'm kind of telling you about what different chemicals cause what different cosmetic effects, or what era of bodybuilding is going on there. So yeah, you know, if you do want to have, like, you know, you're talking about transforming body change traits when you're asking about metformin, and you ask if HGH is the spark plug that is needed. Yeah. Cause I think when you're saying those words, you're kind of talking about like the alien thing and everything, and you're kind of talking about manipulating the insulin and HGH pathways, which creates that modern bodybuilding look, whereas the classic bodybuilding look is more of a steroids thing with low doses of HGH. Okay, Kieran asks, hi Dan, currently I'm cutting. I'm using 600 milligrams of testosterone. I wanted to know, is it actually possible to lose any muscle at all while in a very strict calorie deficit using test only? Well, I got to know what you look like to answer that question accurately. And I got to know like what your lifts are and stuff, you know, because I mean, if you're a mass monster, yeah, you can lose muscle in 600 testosterone. But for the average guy who's serious about bodybuilding, serious about gear and everything like that, you know. I'm guessing, let's just say this, okay, let's say 6 feet tall, 205 pounds, bench presses, two plates per side for 10 totally clean controlled reps, squats 315 below parallel for 10 totally controlled reps, and can deadlift four plates for 10 totally clean reps, okay? This guy, if he takes 600 milligrams of testosterone and then eats a very high protein diet, like 300 to 400 grams of protein per day, and tries the best he can to maintain those lifts that we just talked about, those numbers on those lifts that he already has, tried the best that he can to maintain them. And by the end of his cut, let's say his lifts are down to, from 225 by 10 on the bench press, maybe it's down to 225 by 5 on the bench press. Maybe the squat is down from 315 by 10 to 315 by 5. And same with the deadlift, 405 by 10 to 405 by 5. Okay. Let's say that by the end of his entire cut, his numbers on his lifts went down that much, but he was on 600 milligrams the whole time, and he was eating the 300 to 400 grams of protein per day. This guy is not going to lose any muscle tissue doing that on 600 milligrams of testosterone per week. He's going to lose a lot of fullness, and he's going to look different, and he's going to appear to have lost muscle mass until he refeeds. And that refeed can last something like, it could, depending on how flat he is, and how hibernated the muscles are from, you know, not having energy and shit, it could be that he's, you know, he needs up to like 3 weeks to reinflate and to get looking the way he was before, size wise, but now super lean, you know. But it could be as short as like 3 to 5 days, you know. So we're looking at somewhere between the like 5-ish days to 3 weeks after a cut like that, and obviously getting super flat during the cut because you're going to get flat. But then with those other parameters, maintaining those lifts, eating the protein and everything, the actual protein tissue didn't go away. And it's just a matter of reanimating that protein tissue again. So, yeah, cutting on for like the average guy who's, you know, doing gear and, you know, has got some reasonable lifts that make him, you know, those lifts I talked about are stronger than most of the people doing lifts at your average gym. You know, he's for that guy, 600 chest will be sufficient. But on the other hand, it would be easier to add other things, you know, other things adding to it. Like say, if you took Winstrol with it, your cut would be easier, and yeah, you would look better when you did the cut, and you wouldn't lose all the fullness and shit like that, you know? But like I said, just doing 600 tests like that and cutting, it's fine, and you won't lose muscle. Jason asks, where you been? Where you at? How you doing? I'm in Thailand. We just had a cool holiday called Songkran, and it's a water festival holiday, like a big water fight where the whole country turns into, yeah, a water fight. There's people driving around on trucks with barrels of ice water in the trucks, and the people are in the back of the trucks, and they're like, and then there's like people on the sidewalks, and they've got like barrels of water and shit too. And so like they're having a war, like the people on the sidewalks having a war between them and the trucks driving around. And then the trucks will have like truck to truck, kind of like ship to ship battles, water battles, between the trucks, and, you know, big concert festivals, concerts with, you know, a lot of water, like sprinkler systems on the roof. So water coming down and covering the crowd and everything the whole time. And a lot of funny, crazy music. It's really like a really relaxed, crazy, funny, super fun water fight holiday. And it lasts 1 week in Thailand. So we just had that last week. That was super crazy, super fun. And, you know, I had a blast. I've always really loved that holiday. If you go on my YouTube channel, Dan the Bodybuilder in Thailand, and you look through my adventures playlist, you'll see some of the previous years when I've been playing Songkran Holiday in Thailand. So fun. And then this year I rode through a couple streets on a motorcycle during that and kind of showed some of it. So that was super fun. You guys can check out that YouTube video on Dan the Bodybuilder in Thailand YouTube channel. The new one's Songkran 2024. And so that's what I've been doing. All right, Nikolai asks, longtime listener, your word is gospel, and I spread your podcast to anyone I meet in gyms. That's cool. At work or friends thinking about starting cycles. I currently run 300 tests, 250 DECA. I'm cutting, but I have been advised that DECA is terrible for this. I was originally taking DECA because of a knee problem and will be coming off it when I finish the vial. Currently following a ketogenic diet and fat is coming off, but I'm starting to plateau. What other anabolic substance, preferably injectable, could be used for a cutting cycle? Currently at around 18% body fat. Thanks again, Dan. You're the fucking man. Kill Switch Engage, one of my favorites. And love that that's on the pod. The intro of the pod. So DECA's fine for a cutting cycle. The main thing, again, you know, because you can do test only as a cutting cycle too, like we just discussed, is that you got to have hormones on board when you're cutting, or else you will lose the muscle that you gained when you're bulking. But as far as retaining that protein tissue there, again, it's really about it's about your lifts and about if you're having massive regression in the gym, you're losing all of your strength gains and having a massive strength gain regression, that would symbolize someone losing a lot of muscle tissue. Okay. But if you're able to maintain your lifts in the gym and your body weight is going down at the same time, and you're losing body weight on the scale, but you're on steroids, you're eating protein, and you're maintaining, you know, the most part of your strength in the gym, you're not losing muscle tissue. You're not losing protein muscle tissue. And so testosterone and DECA can do that. They can do that for you. They can be a hormonal support for that muscle tissue, so that when you're in the energy deficient diet and your body is taking things away, taking things down, it's not going to go after the muscle tissue, provided you are providing that resistance each week. Which, why did the muscle get on your body in the first place? Well, it was because you were on a certain amount of hormones and you exposed your body to a certain amount of resistance, okay? And so that certain amount of resistance was the amount of, it was your lifts. It's your lifts that you're doing in the gym. And so you have to keep your body experiencing that resistance in order to prevent that muscle from catabolizing and going off of your body. You have to give your body the reason to keep that muscle, which is basically the same reason that it came on in the first place, is that you took hormones that allowed you to do lifts, that those lifts experiencing those amounts of resistance then cause muscle to be grown as an adaptation to that. And now you've got to keep doing those lifts while you cut and decrease energy and staying as close to the same amounts of resistance and the same numbers as you can while you're doing that cut, in order to give your body the reason to keep hanging on to that muscle when you're losing body weight. And so obviously, again, part of that is taking hormones, but really the hormones, it's, to keep the muscle, you don't have to use as much as you have to do to get the muscle. To get the muscle, you have to use more. So 300 tests, 250 DECA, that's probably fine for your cut. Of course, it's not the best cosmetic effect. And also, the other thing is that some steroids have nutrient partitioning, really heavy nutrient partitioning effects. For example, Trenbolone, Superdrol, Winstrol, Anadrol have very potent carbohydrate nutrient partitioning effects and really drive carbohydrates towards muscles. And people will be able to take these compounds and tolerate eating more carbohydrates and still losing fat than they would if they weren't taking those compounds. So when you're only dieting on something like 300 test 250 deca, you're going to have to be more strict with your diet in order to achieve the same results that you would achieve, you know, if you were using 50 milligrams Winstrol per day instead of 250 deca per week. You know, you're going to have to use a tighter diet with the deca. And again, usually that comes down to controlling the amount of carbohydrates that are coming in. So if you like what, so say you're on your diet and you're wondering, you're on 300 tests, 250 deca, what would be better? Well, and you wanted to just be injectables. Well, if you want it to be injectables and you don't want it to be Tren, then yeah, it's Primobolan, because Primobolan definitely has, I mean, it doesn't have a really strong nutrient partitioning effect, but it does have a muscle fullness effect where it volumizes your muscles and it makes your skin look good. There's something about it, like a cosmetic effect that it does with that. So it does produce like a, you look good now, or like you look better effect from just like having the Primobolan in your blood. Okay. And then, but it doesn't really have like a powerful cutting effect where it's having like a powerful effect on, like carbohydrates and nutrient partitioning like that. And you can like eat more food and still lose fat. That doesn't kick in until like 1,000 milligrams per week of Primobolan. So it has to be like a really high dose to get that effect from it. But anyways, like if you just want to take injectables, you know, 300 test and like 400 Primobolan or something, like that would be better and you'd look better than on your 300 test 250 deca, right? What I think would be the best thing to do right here would be to take 50 milligrams Winstrol per day. That would be like a lot of firepower and it would like really help you cut, but it would not do the cutting work for you at all. It wouldn't, you know, taking steroids, tissue builders, is definitely not the way to get rid of fat tissue. The way to get rid of fat tissue chemically is to take stuff that makes you have no appetite and lose the ability to eat. Taking steroids should be for gaining things or keeping things that you have gained while dieting it off. Relying on steroids for fat loss is super disappointing. So yeah, that's what I think. I think what you're doing is fine. I think what you're doing is good. Okay. Next question. Christian asks, how do these Olympic cyclists get such monster quads? Is it just from gear and cycling? Okay. So Olympic cyclists, for one thing, they have top tier athlete genetics. And so that means that they, you know, if they're Olympic cyclists and they're sprinters, that means that, you know, this person's been competing against other guys for a long time. And to get to the level that he's at, he had to have superior genetics for his specific athletic endeavor, which is sprinting on a bicycle. And sprinting is all about fast twitch muscle fibers, acceleration, power, strength. So he is a person who excels at those things to begin with and has more fast twitch muscle fibers than the average person. Okay. The average person being divided between slow and fast twitch, you know, endurance muscle fibers and explosive strength based muscle fibers. This is a person who is genetically predisposed to be more on that side of explosive strength. He's a sprinter. He's in the Olympics. He's at the top. He's already competed against everybody else who, you know, didn't have those same superior genetics for his sport. So, and that's, again, it's specifically in his legs. So you really are dealing with someone who's like a specimen for having like leg strength, leg power, leg muscle in the first place. So it's, you're not dealing with your average guy. And then the exercise that the cyclists use, their main strength training exercise, is the one-legged leg press on the leg press machine in the gym. And if you ever think that like leg pressing feels awkward, or like it feels like it's putting strain on your lower back or something like that, give the one-legged leg press a try. Because it is a serious exercise. As far as like if you can't do squatting, like what is the next most like closest thing to squatting? It's like the one-legged leg press, because it folds your leg up. It completely folds your leg up and allows your body to move in a way that is much more natural than the way that you move with two legs on it. And it's like when you have two legs on the leg press, it's doing some kind of thing with your lower back where it's like pushing on your legs, but it's also pushing on your lower back. And when you take one leg off and you just do one-legged leg press like that, it's like the entire structure of the leg from the toes and the ball of the foot and the heel through up through the calf, through the hamstring, through the quadriceps and to the glute. The entire thing is maximally loaded and it's basically just like a squat. And it produces really amazing results and pretty explosive, especially for the quadriceps. You'll notice this with this exercise, that like the quadricep, when you're doing it, feels like it's going to explode because it's burning so much. So that exercise that they do there, the one-legged leg press, is part of it. Part of it is genetics, like we talked about, that they're superior, especially in that body part. And then other thing is the training, yes. And then the other thing is, of course, we know that, you know, professional athletes at the top of their game are using whatever it takes to win and be at the top of their sports. So that tells us about how the Olympic guys get such monster quads from cycling. Okay, Aiden asks, question for the pod. Huge fan, Dan. Never been so dialed since reading your book and being a client of your training. Truly the holy grail. Question, are there different mental effects to each steroid? Me personally, I've noticed that high dosages of test above 800 milligrams makes me emotional less, but high dosages of DECA make me determined and more focused. Is this common, and can I use a particular type of gear to focus my mind on bodybuilding overall determination more? Yeah. So different steroids do good with different people. And like, I definitely encourage like experimentation. Like if somebody's wants to say like, you know, like what is the best, or like, I think that, well, that's not a cut and dry question. Like what cycle is the best cycle or something? Cause you really want to find the roids that do good with you, that feel good with you and, cause you the least burden. And then you want to like roll with those roids. And absolutely, like some roids do not agree with people, like with their minds. Some don't agree with their bodies. And you know, one of the really important things to like high level bodybuilding is like how resistant to side effects are you? 'Cause some people do not get side effects, and some people can take cycles that if another dude took it, it would really mess him up bad, because you just have these people who, for whatever reason, you know, mostly genetic reasons, you know, they are not susceptible to side effects and toxicity that other people are susceptible to. They're just tanks and they can just handle it. So those people are generally more successful at higher dosages. And we know from research that gains on gear are dosage dependent. That's very clear from looking at dosage dependent studies on testosterone and other steroids on the amount of muscle mass and strength that they accumulate during the study. It's dosage dependent. It's a direct correlation. But again, if you don't know how to make your body weight go up or down at will, and you don't know how to increase your strength in the gym, so increasing your lifting numbers, increasing your progress, you know, being able to go from using 70-pound dumbbells for 5 sets of 10 reps on the incline press to getting that up to 130 or 140-pound dumbbells for 5 sets of 10 reps. If you don't know how to make those things happen, then if you just, you know, like go and take like some kind of high dose steroid thing, then you're going to be super disappointed because, again, you've got to, if you want to be doing this like really high level extreme stuff, making yourself three times as strong as, you know, a normal man and shit, like every fucking thing has to be on point, man. It's extremely tight how tight everything has to be. So again, there's no, just even though there is like this dose response relationship with the roids, it's not as simple as just saying just take it and that'll make it happen. Like, you're going to be very disappointed again if you take huge doses and the other stuff is not happening at the same time, because then the huge doses aren't going to do what they're capable of. All right. So what, you know, some people say they feel great on D-ball. Other people say they feel great on Anadrol or Superdrol. Some people feel horrible on Anadrol. Some people feel terrible on Superdrol. Me personally, like, the mental effects of Anadrol and Superdrol are like the best for me. You know, I feel like fantastic mentally on Anadrol or Superdrol. But then other people are like, you know, like day three of Superdrol, it's like they're having like the worst day of their life or something and they have to drop it, you know? So it's like experimentation. Other ones, some people, you know, they say that Masteron makes them feel good, or some people say that Primobolan makes them feel good, or testosterone. Some people say that DECA only is what makes them feel good. So it's an experimentation thing. And it's definitely like, you know, what hormones are doing what with your specific psychology, like your specific brain biochemistry and shit. All right, next question. This is part two. It's from the same guy. This is from Aiden. Recently, there was a podcast with Bradley Martin and Phil Heath. Phil claimed his dosages were maximum like 1,000 milligrams through his career. This sounds like a crock of shit. What are your thoughts? He claimed it was his elite genetics. Is that possible, or is he blowing straight smoke? All right, so let's just assume you don't know much about bodybuilding, okay? But now, like I know you do, but this is a hypothetical situation, okay? So let's assume we're in a hypothetical world, a fake world, and you're somebody who doesn't know a lot about bodybuilding. And now let's take out like some beginner bodybuilders, let's take out some intermediate bodybuilders, and let's take out some, you know, open pro bodybuilders, okay? And let's just like line them up in front of you, and let's play a game, spot the steroid abuser, okay? Spot the steroid abuser. Who's abusing steroids, okay? Who? All right, so it's not hard to see, okay? So when someone says, you know, a pro, anyone who's used roids knows that 1,000 milligrams per week or less doesn't do anything close to what, you know, pros do, okay? The only person who will believe something like this is someone who either doesn't want to know the truth, so they're like believing against it, or somebody who's just doesn't have experience. Because 1,000 milligrams per week doesn't do that, bro. It doesn't do that. It's just so laughable to say, like, to take up like pro bodybuilders and be like, this is a low dose steroid user, guys. Like, it's a pro bodybuilder. You think that's someone who doesn't like steroids? They're standing up there telling you they don't like steroids. A pro bodybuilder? Like, man, fucking monkeys just flew out of my butt, dude. Monkeys just flew out of my ass. It just shows that you don't know anything. And that's not said in like a condescending way. It's in a like a tough love way of like, you've still got to gain experience like being around this so that you start to understand more what's going on, because it's like a very secretive community and things are not said, and you know, there's a lot of smoke and mirrors, there's a lot of illusion. I mean, right from the beginning, you know, in the golden era and everything, they'd always say like, oh, okay, bodybuilding is an illusion. And then, you know, a lot of other quotes that you'll hear is like, oh, well, you know, that they just, you know, I know what it takes, you'll hear people say something like, they know what it takes to be the best or to be a pro bodybuilder and stuff. And when they're talking about like what it takes and everything, like, dude, that is code, dude. Like, there are things that a normal person would not be willing to do that a pro bodybuilder is willing to do. And there's a difference there, okay? There's a scientific difference, okay? Look at a natural body and look at a pro bodybuilder, okay? Look at a natural body in your gym at your home, okay? And guys who spend all their time working out there, and then look at a pro bodybuilder. And you have to be able to see this in your brain that there is a massive scientific difference between these bodies. And there is no amount of hard work and determination that is going to overcome that science. All right. Okay, so let's get on to the next question. Sean asks, hey, Dan, can you touch on how to feel if your estrogen is high? I had gyno surgery, concerned about regrowing the gyno. Without ability to pull estrogen bloods every week, can you touch on some signs of high estrogen?
Yeah, well, so estrogen and like gyno, it's not something that is going to like come at you like overnight and then you're going to have like permanent gyno.
Like, you know, if you have like an annoyed nipple gland, if you're having urination issues, if you're having skin issues, these are all indicators that your estrogen is high and you need to take AI. And the AI works within hours, so it's not like you're like waiting a long time to see what happens, you know. So it's a thing of, you know, if you feel side effects, you need to take something to deal with those side effects. And side effects, like we're talking about, like nipple, skin, prostate, those are very strong indicators that you have a high estrogen. And when those indicators exist, they should be knocked down immediately. Okay, next question. Alex asks, if my test and chin freeze, can I heat them back up in hot water and then use them if they appear to be good? Yeah, like, so if your gear, all of a sudden, it looked normal one day, and then all of a sudden, the next day, it's, like, all white, and it's got, like, clouds in it and shit, or like, solid things in it, and you're like, what the hell happened? Well, that was the active ingredients falling out of solution, and so you're, like, seeing the solute now in the solution. So you're like seeing the hormone like not evenly distributed through the oil anymore. And so when you put it under boiling water or something, that's going to redistribute it, and it's going to put it back into solution, put the solute back evenly into the solution when it gets hot again. And if you see that the gear is then, you know, nice and crystal clear again, and it's the way it was before it looked all messed up like that, then yeah, it should be good to go. It should be good to use again. You know, so you're just dealing with putting the solute back evenly into the solution that had fallen out of the solution. That's called crashed gear when that happens. The gear crashed. And so you run it under hot water or steam or whatever, and then that, you swirl it around a little bit and that fixes it. Okay, Cunningham asks, does taking steroids in general lower GABA, serotonin, norepinephrine, or dopamine levels? Okay, so steroids are neural modulators, okay? There's like some confusion or something that like, oh yeah, like steroids is like dopamine or something like that, but it's not accurate. So what steroids... They're modulators, okay? So they alter responses. They alter things that are already happening in your brain. So, like, for example, if a brain experiences a stimulus that could be processed as sexual stimulus, a brain that has been saturated in testosterone will be modulated to respond more strongly to that sexual stimulus, okay? And so this is, could be, a, you know, maybe you've experienced this.
because maybe you're on a certain cycle or something, and you feel like out of the corner of your eye, you're seeing maybe, you know, stuff where you might be like, okay, that's a hot girl or something like that. Or maybe it's not, maybe it's just, like an average or something, but you're seeing, you're like being pulled towards that. And you're noticing like my brain is interpreting like low level, what may have been before lower or like not very sexually stimulating stimuli may all of a sudden be really catching your attention. And you're being like, why is this? And okay, well, that's because the steroids modulated the processing on that type of stimuli, so that that type of stimuli now, it's having like, it's like turning the gain up on the guitar amplifier and making a way bigger signal, that for the signal that's coming in now, that's being processed is larger than it was before. And so you're getting this like hyper response to some things. And you'll see this with like cars backfiring too. And like, or like loud noises, or like a garbage can shutting too hard. And like your head like whipping around to those sounds and being like, you know, what's going on? You'll notice these things. You're like more sensitive to things. You're more alert. Okay. And so, yeah, like there is neurotransmitter effects, like in certain areas of the brain, you know, like taking some steroid can like increase some dopamine there, or like, you know, certain large amounts of steroids can also have a stimulant effect, which can increase epinephrine, norepinephrine in the brain and the body and make you, you know, like more turned up, like you've been on a caffeine overdose or something, or like shaking, stuff like that, you know, from taking too much roids. So definitely they modulate and they alter the various different neurotransmitters, the various different nervous systems. The steroids are having an effect on that. We all know that hormones affect behavior. I mean, did you behave different before and after puberty? Well, that was because hormones affect your behavior. Okay. You're still the same person. You're still the same person, but those hormones, those steroids that entered your system, entered your brain, entered your spinal cord, are altering your behavior. They're modulating systems that already exist so that those systems behave a bit differently than they did before. But you're still the same person. Those systems do behave differently than they did before, though. Very, very interesting phenomena. Very, very interesting phenomena that needs to be, you know, research more so that we can have more knowledge about it. That would be so cool, because that's like one of the really exciting things, you know, about roids is, I mean, you notice that they affect you. Careless Passion asks, can you talk about yohimbine for fat loss? Okay, so yeah, yohimbine is good for fat loss, and I've talked about it in other podcast episodes. So, I mean, there's protocols for it and everything, but here's the thing that you have to keep in mind with yohimbine. Is it's a stimulant, okay? So when you take it, it causes your heart to start beating really hard and faster, okay? And it does that within 10 minutes because it's very fast absorbing and very fast acting. And it causes an effect, an anxiety effect, okay? Like I feel like probably if you took enough yohimbine, it's probably possible to like trigger panic attacks, and probably like anyone if they took enough yohimbine, because this shit does give you anxiety because it is a stimulant and it does have effects in like increasing your heart rate, increasing your adrenaline, increasing your alertness and your readiness, and like putting your fight or flight response on. Like it's going to do that, and it's going to do that really hard. So that's what people have to be ready for when they take yohimbine. A lot of people are thinking like, oh, it's just a supplement or something. But no, this is like a chemical that has a strong effect on the way that you feel and your consciousness within 10 minutes. And so if a person is ready for that, you know, that might decrease a lot of the anxiety, because then they're like, okay, well, I just took this thing. And then the other thing is that those effects kind of go away within like 1 to 2 hours after taking the yohimbine. It's pretty short acting. But people should be aware when they're going to take the yohimbine that, okay, when I put this pill in my mouth, 10 minutes later, I'm going to have a very strong feeling, and be ready for that. Be ready and know that that's coming, because that's what puts people off of Yohimbine. And I mean, yeah, it puts you off Yohimbine, because like it works, but like using that shit consistently and experiencing that kind of anxiety or that kind of like borderline panic or something consistently, like that doesn't sound fun at all. That sounds like so shitty. So it's really not one, like it's one that a lot of people will like experiment with maybe like one time and be like, well, fuck this. I don't want to do that again. But if somebody didn't mind it and they were able to tolerate it and it was cool with them, then yeah, it would be like a super effective tool. Because when we're talking about like fasted cardio, taking Yohimbine, it's very effective. And the dose that can be taken, you know, the dose range can really vary, but I think that 5 milligrams is fine. Or even 3.5 milligrams is fine. I mean, you're going to feel that. You're going to feel it, man. But, you know, 10 milligrams is also a dose that is used. You know, so 5 to 10 milligrams being like a reasonable dosage range per application. And just because it's really strong and it has those anxiety producing effects, I would definitely start on the low end of that and work up to the higher end of that, if you so desire. Okay, and the last question for today. Estello asks, question for the pod. I'm coming off my second cycle, 1 gram of testenanthate. In a few weeks, I plan to cruise. Would you still recommend to completely come off for a few weeks? Or when I feel hormones crash, then start TRT, 250 milligrams per week. Or just switch directly to a cruise. I know you usually come off of everything before switching to a cruise. I didn't take any orals or other injectables other than the test and anastrozole. Love the podcast. I'm listening to it all day and reading your book at night, Ultimate Guide to Roids, 109-page ebook by Dan the Bodybuilder from Thailand, is literally the best book ever written. Nice. I feel a sense of, I'm proud because I really put like my heart and soul into that book, right? When I was writing that, I really remember writing that because it was about 2.5 months, 3 months where at 24/7 all day, I was sitting in Starbucks in Los Angeles, California. And I was writing that book and I had my big plan to really expose like the reality of bodybuilding. That had never been done before. And I was like, I'm going to put this shit out here. I was like, I'm going to put the true fucking information out for the first time ever. And I'm going to, you know, cause I've written, you know, I've been doing this bodybuilding thing. I've read all the books and everything. And I was like, you know, for once and for all, I'm going to put out the gold mine, the keys to the Lamborghini. I'm going to put that out. And you know, it's going to be like, fuck yeah. You know, that's what's up. You know, you can, you now there's something that can just cut through all this horse shit, all this smoke and mirrors, all these lies that I had to wade through and like do all myself, like all these freaking years figuring out the answers to all these questions. And now just put that shit out there and it's a price that it's less than like people pay even for like a half a vial of like gear or something. So like even in the third world, everyone can get it, you know? So I had like a very ideological thing with producing that book, Ultimate Guide to Roids, 109-page ebook by Dan the Bodybuilder from Thailand. And the perfect name for it is Ultimate Guide to Roids, because that's what it is. It's the guide to bodybuilding. If what my goal always was when I first joined the gym was I wanted to be a bodybuilder. I wanted to be like Arnold. I wanted to be like Franco Colombo. I wanted to be, you know, I wanted that. That's what I wanted. And, you know, I really wish that I would have had a clear roadmap of how that works, how to get that. I wish that that would have been there. But instead, you know, it ended up, you know, being like, you know, this like decades long thing of researching, you know, how this thing is done, because there is no clear plan. There is no clear format about how to do that. You know, it's like piecing together all this information. So I put together that book and it's like a big, it's like, you know, it's what I wish I had. It's what I wish I had. And so I feel like, you know, when I get these kind of comments from readers coming in and you know, like it's like consistent, you know, because it's like every single person that reads the book is like, you know, this is the best thing ever. This is the thing I wish I had 40 years ago, whatever, you know, it's so overwhelmingly positive feedback. I feel very proud of that because I really put my heart and soul into that book. I did. All right, so let's answer the question. So should he come off before doing a cruise? He says he's been on cycle. And so this, I think this is the best way, okay? Again, this is one of those things that is like not that consequential, but this is a good way of doing things. Like, okay, so you've been taking roids. You've been doing a cycle. Let's say you've been on 12 weeks, 16 weeks, 20 weeks, 24 weeks, something like that, okay? And now you're thinking of, you know, coming off cycle and going to a cruise. So you've got a lot of stuff in your blood. You got a lot of stuff. You got a lot of stuff you're on in your blood. And that stuff isn't coming out the day after you stop injecting. You know, so the end of your cycle, your last injection or whatever, that stuff lasts in your body. And so if you just don't take anything for like 3 weeks, like at the end of 3 weeks after your cycle, that's probably like the first day that like you reasonably like don't have anything in your system. And that's pretty much what I'm saying here is my method, is to come off of the cycle and then to just not take anything for a month. So like the cycle ends, you take your last shot, and then it's like 1 month after that where like nothing is taken. And like the hormones drain out of your system. And then by like week four or whatever, you're finally feeling like, you know, I feel like I'm like, you know, your body isn't back to normal. You still got, you know, protein buildup and stuff. But it's like you feel like I'm kind of like back to normal. Like you kind of like remember like feeling like what it's like being natural and everything, because like your brain is different too. And so you're like, I'm back to normal. I kind of like feel normal, but you haven't given it enough time to like let like the protein of your muscles start like breaking down or anything, you know, because it's only been like, you know, after 4 weeks, it's been like a week, 2 weeks that you haven't had hormones in your body. So like while the fullness is down, there's no significant protein loss. Okay. And now this is when is a good time to start up the TRT, you know. That's a good time to start up the TRT. So you get this, you know, you went on this big up roller coaster. And now you just take a little time off and then you start up the TRT to, you know, right when, because if you would have kept, you know, going on that, you know, like not on anything after the cycle more than a month, then yeah, you're going to start experiencing protein loss because of a lack of hormones. So then, yeah, it's great to go on TRT and everything. Take like a milliliter of testosterone, like 250 milligrams of testosterone per week or something. That's great. That sounds great. That's my method. That's my method. But if somebody wants to finish their cycle and then go, you know, just the next week, you know, start taking their TRT, take their TRT shot. And just, you know, take no break between ending the cycle and, you know, taking 1 milliliter of testosterone per week or whatever. I don't see a problem with that. That's fine. That's totally fine. That's another method. But I feel like my method, I think, is superior, where you take some time off. Because I another thing is that I really believe in this thing where you cannot go 100% all year long in training, diet, and roids. Like there has to be an undulation in order for you to be able to give it that 100%, because that's just, you know, going redlining the engine constantly, going 100% constantly, you burn yourself out. You just can't do it. And even Dorian Yates said that. He said that you can't go 100% 24/7, 365. There has to be periods of recovery. There has to be periods of less intensity and periods of greater intensity. That's just the way like life in general works. And that's why I think that combined with the mental effects of going off for a little while, that's really what pushes it over the edge for me, and thinking that that method is superior, is the mental effects of going off for a little while, because you'll kind of feel like some of these like tender feelings and stuff that may have been being blocked from being on gear. Maybe like feelings like with your family or close friends, people you care about, stuff like that. You'll kind of some of these feelings may have been being blocked by gear that you're using, and to kind of remember and experience those feelings again can be a very valuable thing.
All right. So that's going to be the last question for the podcast today. It's fun talking to you guys, and I'll be coming up with another episode for you guys real soon here. So make sure to go pick up Ultimate Guide to Roids, 109-page ebook by Dan the Bodybuilder from Thailand. You know, if you just go to bodybuilderinthailand.com, it's I think it's the first article on the homepage where you can check it out and read like 20 pages. It's definitely worth it. It's my best content. You know, if you like the podcast, the book will blow you away.